Hello, and welcome to the Software Stories podcast from Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Andy Davis. In this show, I'll be chatting to software experts from all sectors about their careers in tech. The show aims to bring you insights, anecdotes, and stories from like-minded professionals that you can learn from and apply to your own career. If you like the show and you want to hear more from us, you can follow us via SoundCloud, iTunes, or Spotify, or join us on Slack. Thank you, and enjoy the show. So we've got Greg Taylor here. He's the general manager at Brill.app. Greg, pleasure to have you on the show, mate.
Andy, thank you so much for having me.
Before we get stuck into it, mate, would you mind just sort of giving the listeners a bit of a brief overview of your sort of background and experiences?
Yeah, sure. So really briefly, I'll try and make it brief. I came out of university with a master's degree in graphic design, and started a startup with a few mates back in New Zealand, and did that for a while, and then I realized I knew nothing about business whatsoever, and having a startup and stuff like that is kind of a bit of a prerequisite that you know some things. So I embarked on a journey where I joined a company that was creating mobile websites. I was really, really into mobile. So this is before smartphones, which is testament to my age. And, just really, really got hooked on mobile and the potential with that. I ended up marrying a lovely German lass, and I came over to the UK in about 2009. And that's where I joined a company called Tiger Spike, and they're on the bleeding edge of sort of mobile technology. And I've just ridden that technology wave ever since, right? So the iPhone came out, the iPad came out, and I grew a design team because I have a design background. So I grew a large UI UX team. Which was an incredible journey, just, playing with new technologies and working really closely with Apple and getting devices before they were released on the market. So it was really a real buzz, and we did some incredible work for some really big customers, and it was, an awesome journey of discovery. And reasonably recently, we've started a startup studio, and I'm one of the co-founders of that. It's, we have a large corporate backer, which is really awesome. And and that's landed us in creating something I want to talk a little bit more about today, which is called Brill.app, where we're saving people thousands and thousands of hours of lost time and type, rather than typing stuff, you can use other technologies. And that's really a really satisfying journey we're on at the moment.
Awesome, mate. So it's, the UX UI function, and just to briefly digress on that, I don't know, it was just coincidence actually. I was literally reading something this morning. And I think without going into massive detail about, I think what the article was getting at, it was a lot of the kind of contradictory philosophies that various people in UX UI have. And I wondered what your kind of take is, and whether, you tend to hear that in the sort of world of LinkedIn, or, just through networks and stuff.
Man, it used to be such a simpler world in mobile, right? So when I started back in the day, doing these apps and all this new stuff, there was no sort of UI/UX or XD or whatever acronym you want to use, really for mobile. Everything was brand new, right? Mm-hmm. Touch screens and the width of your finger and how heavy a phone is and how long a battery lasts and what connection you've got and graceful degradation of like the interfaces. All this sort of stuff was so new. We were borrowing bits and pieces from web, right? Web methodologies around user experience and things like that. But this was a totally different ballpark. So when I was building that team back in the day, it was so cool because I would just plug gaps in the team's knowledge with specialists in a particular field. And if people hadn't done a lot of web, it was almost quite good, and we were just sort of, in many cases, making it up as we went along because there was nothing really online at the start that you could learn about. So, you'd go to meetups and you'd meet other people in the industry, and it was so awesome back in the day because you were just kind of like, oh, what do you call it? And now if I look, it's so different, and everyone does UX, and there's all these different, and you're right, there's all these different methodologies, there's arguments, what is UX, the experience is everything, is UX part of UI, is UI part of UX, what about interaction design, where does that sit? And there are people who, form groups and go, I'm in this gang, this is my opinion, this is how it works, everyone else is wrong. And there's other people in various sort of gangs, but we all kind of do very similar things and have similar viewpoints, and a lot of it, of course, now revolves around users and being user-centric. Like, that wasn't a term in mobile sort of 10 plus years ago. And now everyone is user-centric, which is a good thing. But yeah, it's interesting to see how it's evolved.
Yeah, yeah. It seems to have been on a similar journey along with data and like the better and analytics. I think the more like you've sort of been able to rely on that aspect of it, I think it's kind of it's just shaped the way that I think people have approached UX UI. But I think I don't know. For me, it's still. Do you still think that it falls predominantly under like a creatives? Because it's like you still have problems, right? And you just have to solve them with good design. And sometimes, like, do you think that with data in general, we kind of all can overcomplicate things? And you know, it's just as simple as like sometimes, like, well, yeah, the data might be saying this, but it's probably just because it looks like shit.
Yeah, it's a really, really interesting discussion. Data. You've got to be really careful about using data just to drive your product design. It's obviously really important, but data is kind of like an outcome.
Yeah.
And you can use it. You can use it to steer things, and the data doesn't necessarily lie. But you've got to be really careful of what data you're collecting, what data you're looking at, and why you're looking at that data. I don't know. I'm probably a little bit biased on the creative versus data sort of thing because it's what I trained in for like 5+ years. So that creativity and I think is really, really important for solving problems. Technology is just a tool for that. And the other cool point, which I won't dive into too much, but I think is really interesting, is excuse the corporate lingo, but that synergy between people and having a team of people who work really well together and get into this, you know, flow state can just achieve incredible, incredible things together. And you add a bit of data to that mix and then you're kind of unstoppable. And I think a lot of products fail and fall over and so many problems when you have teams that are just kind of put together and there's all these different, you know, like maybe people don't like each other or they're not open to understanding each other or they're just tired but you know what I mean? But like when you have teams that really gel, there's a special little bit of special sauce that happens there. And that is a really, really cool place to be. And if you can hit flow and just roll.
Yeah. Well, I agree because I think there's so much value that is massively overlooked with ourselves. We're always trying to, I mean, don't get me wrong, like automation has been phenomenal. You know, the data has been clearly helpful. It allows us to be much more customer-centric, as you mentioned before. But there's still, like, what we should be doing is understanding the value in that is that it actually gives us the opportunity to use our skills as humans. You know, what we're not good at is monotony, you know, doing things. You know, the computers are really good at that, right? They can do the same thing over and over again. They can correlate data really fast. We can't compete with that. But what we can do is think things on a deeper level and be creative. And I think hopefully with perhaps good segue for Brill, you know, is that when we have that time back, it then allows us to focus our attention on this. But my kind of theory is what I see. We've been so reliant on feeling the need to be busy, you know, typing emails, like, you know, doing all this kind of busy sort of work. But when we're not doing that, we feel like we're not being productive. And there's a piece that's missing there.
Interesting. So, I'll talk a little bit about how this Brill thing came about because that kind of dovetails into what you were talking about. More corporate lingo there with dovetail. But we were sitting in a meeting one day and like many of us do, right, and as knowledge workers, non-routine work. There was just loads and loads and loads of notes being created all over a whiteboard. And it was a really good session, actually. This was like mid last year. And the facilitator then turned around and said, okay, great, great session, everyone, high five. Ooh. Can I get someone to type this out, please? And there was just this awkward silence. So we all looked at each other and were like, well, no one wants to type that out. And what a laborious task would take, I don't know, well over an hour or whatever. Right. And we all, being in the industry, being the software people we are, we sort of looked around and was like, there must be an app for this, right? So we started then and there, started trawling the net and, you know, app stores and found all the traditional sort of, you know, applications and note-taking style applications, and there's some big players in that market. It's been around for a long time. But we couldn't find anything that made it super, super quick, easy, and dare I say it, fun to capture all these notes. We just couldn't find anything. Like, found a few things that did kind of what we wanted, but even if, for example, you could do sort of voice-to-text dictation, you couldn't then directly export those notes into Trello or Jira or, you know, any project management software.
Mm.
So we're kind of like, oh, man. And so we started doing some rapid prototypes, as you do. And initially, we were just using voice and like a really nice user experience, and was able to then create Brill. And that's how sort of it launched, was like, okay, great, we can now rapidly digitize this handwritten content and then get it into the platforms of our choice really easily. And that was kind of like the light came on. It was like, okay, is there something in this? But what got me through that journey, I'll talk about where that is now because it's moved on a bit since just the voice stuff. But what really got me and the team at the start of that journey was, man, we just had this moment, the light came on. It was like, we've been typing using keyboards like our whole careers. Why have we never thought of this sort of thing before, and where can this go? Then you start looking into the keyboards, and the QWERTY keyboard was invented. I think it came out commercially on a typewriter in like 1873. Don't quote me on that. It's 1870s. And it hasn't that QWERTY, that layer hasn't fundamentally changed. We've put a bunch of keys around the outside, but actually the layer hasn't changed since the 1800s. And that really gets you thinking, like, okay, next year it's 2020 and we're still using a keyboard from the 1800s. Why, with all this great technology, are we not doing something else? And then it was like you look around and everyone's typing stuff, and, okay, sometimes it's not digitizing analog content, but when they are digitizing analog content, it's almost like people sometimes feel like that's the job. They're busy. They're productive. I'm digitizing all the stuff. I'm typing. It takes hours, but it's okay because this is what I do. But actually, that's such a waste of just, you know, time that could be spent doing way, way more productive, interesting things. So for businesses, obviously, there's a commercial element to that, which is amazing. And just for people, just for people to free up an extra half an hour, hour in your day, depending on how often you do these types of things.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And I think if this takes off, for instance, just to digress again, Do you ever think that, like, people literally would wonder what to do with themselves?
It makes me, like, yeah, there's an optimistic and pessimistic side, right? So my pessimistic side is like, oh man, this is never going to work because no one's ever going to change their habits and change and stop using a keyboard because they feel as if they feel good. They're like, oh, I'm so productive today. I've spent hours digitizing all this stuff and I've shared it with everyone. I'm a god, you know. And then there's the optimistic side of me that goes, maybe once people experience Brill, we've had incredible feedback so far. Like this, we've got this new computer vision feature using AI and stuff, which is really cool. And it's been live for about 8 weeks, and the feedback's been phenomenal because people actually use it. And this is the optimistic side. Once they use it, they go, I can type roughly at like 42 words a minute. It's like the global average for typing, 42 words a minute. But with using computer vision and artificial intelligence, I can take a photo and it takes 2 seconds to type out something that would take minutes or whatever. So once people try Brill with, say, sticky notes is the big one at the moment, because we use computer vision to detect handwritten sticky notes and then artificial intelligence to digitize that text, and it works in over 100 different languages. So it's kind of quite incredible. Once people use that, they have that, oh, wow, that was cool. It feels like magic. And then the optimistic side of me hopes that people go, next time they go to type out some sticky notes, they go, oh, this is just crazy. I'm just going to Brill it. But I think it's almost as if you have to feel that magic emotionally. You have to try it. It has to be seen to be believed. And then I'm hoping that, yeah, people will go, okay, cool, I don't need to waste time typing. I'll Brill it, and I'll use that time to get home earlier and spend it with my spouse and family, or get to the pub, or do something more productive for my business, or whatever it may be.
Going to the pub is definitely going to be more productive for business. I don't think there's any doubt about that. So
could be doing a deal. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. It's interesting because I just genuinely, I love the concept, but I also think that it opens up such a question about this whole idea of like productivity and like I think you said in some of the notes, like changing productivity. And for me, like, I think it's such a challenge because we're so ingrained in what busy looks like. And I think it varies from business to business, but I certainly know that, like, when I first started out, like, I hadn't necessarily been in a business environment before. So for me, I looked around and just thought, right, you know, whether I was consciously thinking about this at the time, but obviously I am now in reflection.
Yeah.
But you're thinking, right, everyone else is typing. They've got their heads down. I should be typing and have my head down. Like, that's the way that everyone's going to think, wow, look at that productive worker over there. Isn't he amazing? Maybe I even stay an hour longer just to show everyone how much I really care. You know, like, so it's not even about, like, productivity. It's perception, because people are so influenced by, like, their surroundings, and, like, they're so concerned about what others think about them in a work environment that, you know, it really is a cultural shift to adjust, like, what's that person doing who's being productive? Like, we've probably all been in that point in our career where we just think, you know, that person, he's made about 4 coffees today. I'm like, what's he doing? You know, and I just, so, but why are we worried about it? You know, why is it? It's such a cultural thing that people are kind of seemingly obsessed with. So, you know, to create a piece of technology like this is, you know, you almost need a kind of, I think, a cultural shift as well. I think people will do it because it saves time, but then I think people might use it and then still go and type some other stuff up, you know, because we're just confused about, like, what productivity is, the way that things are, you know, ultimately being digitalized. And I think that it's super exciting, but I do feel as though we're at a sort of point of inflection with amazing technologies like Brill, where, you know, there's the technologies there, but then the real change almost will be coming the behavior side of it.
Yeah, I think you made a couple of really good points there. I think, just to quote you, you talk about, you know, what busy looks like, you know, like, what is it, what does busy look like? What, and I think what I would say, inflection point, yes, I do think those types of things are already here and coming. And one of the reasons for that is this increasing amount of pressure on businesses to perform, you know, with what they've got or less, you know, and that's probably a constant throughout the business world, really. But, you know, like, businesses need to find, you know, inventive ways of squeezing more out of people, you know, to do the work that really matters. And we know that businesses who don't perform, like, you know, if you miss an innovation in business, you can just, you can just be gone in a couple of years type of thing, or sooner. We see that, right? Businesses just going from massive prominence to all of a sudden, oh my God, they're bankrupt. Oh my God, they're in insolvency. Oh my God, they're, you know, they're looking for a bailout. And it happens more and more. And as technology increases, it's companies and people who jump on these new types of technologies to get to be better and actually not strive for busy, but strive for results that will naturally rise above other businesses where they're kind of like, oh, we're just doing what we always do. Yeah, busy, we're typing. You know, yes, as a person, I'm concerned about what other people think, so I'm just going to plod on. But then you'll have some people like, yeah, well, I am results driven. Results are more important than being busy. And even if I do care what people think, check this out. Watch this. You know, we've just had this massive session of all these incredible bits of information that we've generated as a team. Let's not lose any of it, and let's not waste time typing it up. Let's get onto the work that really matters, because it ain't typing on a keyboard from the 1800s. Let me tell you that it's actually doing the work beyond what you've just created. So you're right. Some people won't use this. Some people won't even think it's a good idea. But then you'll have other people who are, you know, the early adopters who go, wow, okay, yeah, we don't need to type. I'm going to spend all of that time doing stuff that really matters to drive results.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's like a commercial process of elimination potentially then.
I think it's just a natural progression, I guess, the way things have always been. I mean, I haven't been around forever, so I can't quote to like before I was born or whatever. But throughout history, people who have jumped on new technologies that really have an impact seem to have you know, more of an advantage. I'm not saying Brill is the answer to everything, because clearly it's not going to be. But for a slice, I hope that it will make an impact and free people up to do other more important things. At the end of the day, it's going to be up to them to work that out for themselves, you know. But, yeah, I hope that it'll make a big difference and give back a lot of time. We've already saved a bunch of time for people, so, yeah. Hopefully it will continue.
Yeah, I like it. I genuinely believe that that's like – I'm such an optimist about – technologies like this, about automation, AI, all the rest of it, because I just think that like it's gonna allow us to just have such more fulfilled, that was horrendously articulated, much more fulfilled lives, I think, just because we're gonna get the opportunity to like really use the aspects of our brains that make us like feel really good about it, you know, which is talking and really thinking things through on deeper levels. Like, I don't know about you, but like I pretty much get the biggest buzz at work when like I really like shut myself off and really think through a problem and eventually actually come up with a solution on how to solve it, you know. And that's just thinking, that's literally just thinking, you know. I might be jotting a couple of things down or whatever, or I might be stood up at the whiteboard like racking my brains, but when I solve it, it's like that's the buzz. It's not the then going and typing it out or, you know, doing whatever I need to do technically to fix it. Like, for me, that's just like, that's just, oh, I've got to just kind of do that. But that's where the buzz comes. So if you can kind of solve part of it, which might include like uploading notes or, you know, automating work with like very simple, I mean, there's some incredible technologies out there now that's, you know, that save time on all kinds of stuff. You know, if it's saving time on that, and then you can think about the next problem, that's like a much more compelling place for us to be. We're going to feel so much more fulfilled. It's not going to be like you've been on the trains going into London where a load of people just look grey, you know. It's like the blue suit, everyone's grey, you know, and it's just, they just do, don't it just look, because people are just exhausted, and it's not because they're dealing with problems in this way, it's because they're having to do things over and over and over again. There's not enough time in the day to sort, to kind of do what they need to do and then actually think about it. Whereas if they had the time to think, they probably wouldn't be under pressure because they'd have already come up with better solutions. So, you know, that's sort of the paradigm that I think a lot of people are dealing with, and it just doesn't help things, and it goes into a whole mental health thing, and we could be on this podcast for hours. But that is ultimately, you know, the problem at hand. And, you know, this is, I think, why the beauty of these, you know, this is the beauty of these kind of innovations.
Yeah, I think that you've gone broad brushstroke, but you're absolutely right. I'm just thinking back to my morning commute this morning, and it was a bit chilly on the train this morning. But, it's always the same, right? And you do look around, and I've felt that as well, just, I think a lot of us have in the Western world, in the business world especially, where there's so much, so many things, you know, that need to be done, and you need to be continually every 10 minutes or less prioritizing what the important things are. And that can, if you don't know how to, you know, take care of yourself and those around you and ask for help when you need it, then that can really wear people down. So what about if we gave, you know, ourselves a little bit of extra time? What about if the people around us had a little bit of extra time? That would be awesome. Point one. Point two is that there is so much waffle around artificial intelligence, as you know, it's an umbrella term for so many different technologies, that people are a little bit kind of like, oh god, yeah, AI, yep, sure, show me how it's really helping, you know, how is this actually going to help us? And then there's a bit of fear about the future, like, is it going to steal my job? One bunch of, you know, wisdom says absolutely. Another bunch says, no, it'll complement you. And then you've got Elon Musk with neural lace trying to plug us into the internet. So, yeah, where is it going? I don't know. I just hope that, you know, with these technologies, we can actually do some good in the world. And hopefully people will then use that time for good as well.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, my passion is about the mental health side of things. I just think that, you know, if we can put people in a position where they are fulfilled, they don't feel these pressures immediately. I know it's a bigger question than work, but it's certainly a massive part of it. You know, so if we can do that, put people in positions to feel more fulfilled on average than they do right now, not have to work, you know, 60, 70 hours a week, then that's as good of a problem solved as any for me.
I think so. Yeah, it's like there are some incredible forces at play at the moment. So you've got hardware, which is really coming along at an incredible pace, has been for years. You know, the iPhone's got what, 3 cameras now. You've got the democratization of artificial intelligence, whereas before, only a few years ago, you needed to have rooms and rooms and rooms of computer scientists and some very, very smart people, and now you can plug and play the whole different bunch of services. And then you've got the pressures on businesses to perform. That's like 3 parts of 4. And then you've got wetware, which is us, you know, hardware, software, and wetware is the humans, of course. And I think that's, I just really, really hope that we can shape these technologies, hardware, sort of artificial intelligence, and the pressures that we feel to help people do good things. And I think although Brill's not going to solve every problem in the world, I hope Brill and other products like it, by using advancing technologies, can help. And I think it can. Like, I'm looking at the stats. In 8 weeks, we've saved hundreds of hours of time, because on average, taking a photo of, you know, X amount of 100 words and instantly digitizing it is so much faster than 42 words a minute. We can see the stats on average that we're saving loads of time, which is really fulfilling. And I'm just, you know, the more you're talking about sort of, you know, mental health and the impact and people just not having time, we've got to find good solutions with these incredible technologies to actually, you know, add value to people's lives.
Yeah,
it's a really, really interesting space. And I think as time goes on, it will get more and more interesting. But I hope that everyone uses these technologies for good and not for evil.
Absolutely, mate. So just before we finish, mate, anyone who wants to keep up to date on Brill's progress, learn about potentially any job opportunities, all the rest of it, where's the best place for people to go and sort of keep up to date?
So, yeah, I mean, check out Brill.app. So from Brill.app online, it has all the different links to our sort of social media, and there's some frequently asked questions and things in there as well. So, yeah, I would just check us out on social media. You can sign up to our newsletter and things like that as well. That's how we keep everyone up to date with what's happening. There's some pretty cool, just to round off on the product side itself, there's some really cool stuff coming up. You just talked about how satisfying it is when you're at a whiteboard and, you know, solve a solution or something like that. We had a really awesome 2-hour session yesterday with our technical director, Rui Sylvester, and our design director, Nassos Kappa, who were working with me. We're at this whiteboard, and we're at the whiteboard for a couple of hours looking at how we can upgrade the current experience around vision and how much more value we can create based on all the feedback we've got and all this sort of stuff. And it was like an hour and a half of, we're at each other's throats, we're pulling each other's hair out, and it was like, what about this, what about that? And then at the end of it was so satisfying, because we had cracked how we can take this product up a notch. And it was so fulfilling. And I'm so glad we had that session and we weren't typing out notes.
Oh, awesome, mate. Greg, I can't thank you enough for taking the time, mate. Genuinely enjoy the chat. Hopefully we'll do it again soon.
Yeah, Andy, I really appreciate it, mate. Good luck with everything. And yeah, hopefully speak again soon.
Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturers Voice Slack group. See you next time.